the French and scholars alike. But not to me. I wish I could boast that I had cracked a code, or deciphered an ancient text, or tracked an incomprehensible map to a hidden cache of papers. In fact, it was pure serendipity, disguised in the form of an elderly descendant of the Purple Gentian. Mrs. Selwick Alderley had made me free of both her home and a vast collection of family papers. She didn't even ask for my firstborn child in return, which I understand is frequently the case with fairy godmothers in these sorts of situations. The only drawback to this felicitous arrangement was Mrs. Selwick Alderley's nephew, current owner of Selwick Hall and self-appointed guardian of the family heritage. His name? Mr. Colin Selwick. Yes, that Colin Selwick. To say that Colin had been less than pleased at seeing me go through his aunt's papers would have been rather like saying that Henry VIII didn't have much luck with matrimony. If decapitations were still considered a valid way of settling domestic problems, my head would have been the first on his block. Under the influence of either my charming personality or a stern talking to from his aunt, I suspected the latter, Colin had begun to thaw to nearly human behavior. I must say, it was an impressive process. When he wasn't snapping insults at me, he had the sort of crinkly-eyed smile that made movie theaters full of women heave a collective sigh. If you liked the big blonde sporting type. Personally, I went more for tall, dark, and intellectual myself. Not that it was an issue. Any rapport we might have developed had rapidly disintegrated when Mrs. Selwick Alderley suggested that Colin give me access to the family archives at Selwick Hall for the weekend. Suggested is putting it a bit mildly. Railroaded would be more to the point. The traffic gods hadn't done anything to help the situation. I had given up trying to make small talk somewhere along the A23, where there had been an epic traffic jam involving a stalled-out car, an overturned lorry, and a tow truck that reached the scene of the crime and promptly broke down out of sympathy. I cast another surreptitious glance in Colin's direction.
"Would you stop looking at me like you're Red Riding Hood and I'm the wolf?"
Maybe it hadn't been all that surreptitious. "Why, Grandmother, what big archives you have?" As an attempt at humor, it lacked something, but given that it was the first time my vocal cords had had any exercise over the past 2 hours, I was reasonably pleased with the result.
"Do you ever think about anything else?" asked Colin.
It was the sort of question that from anyone else I would have construed as an invitation to flirtation. From Colin, it just sounded exasperated. "Not with a dissertation deadline looming."
"We," he pronounced ominously, "still have to discuss what exactly is going to go into your dissertation."
I said enigmatically. He had already made his feelings on that point clear, and I saw no point in giving him the opportunity to reiterate them. Less discussed, more easily ignored. It was time to change the subject. "Wine gum?" Colin emitted a choked noise that might have been a laugh, if allowed to grow up. His eyes met mine in the rearview mirror in an expression that might have been, "I like your nerve," or might have been, "Oh God, who let this lunatic loose in my car and where can I dump her?" All he actually said was, "Thanks," and held out one large hand, palm up. In the spirit of entente, I passed over the orange and flipped a red one into his palm. Popping the despised orange into my own mouth, I sucked it meditatively, trying to think of a conversational gambit that wouldn't touch on forbidden topics. Colin did it for me.
"If you look to your left," he said, "you should be able to see the house."
I caught a brief, tantalizing glimpse of crenellated battlements looming above the trees like a lost set from a Frankenstein movie before the car swung around a curve, bringing us into full view of the house. Built of a creamy-colored stone, the house was what the papers might call a stately pile, a square central section with the usual classical adornments, with a smaller wing sticking out on either side of the central block. It was a perfectly normal 18th-century gentleman's residence, and exactly what one would expect the Purple Gentian to have lived in. There were no battlements. The car scraped to a halt in the circle of gravel that fronted the entrance. Not waiting to see if he was going to open the door for me, I grabbed the oversized tote in which I had crammed 2 days' worth of weekend wear.